So, I'm very tired. Oh, wow, I just came in from outdoors. I was working out. How cold is it? It felt like it was below zero for a while there today. Let me see if I can find out how cold it is right now. It's minus five. I know that my fingers were getting nippy. I could feel. So I had to put some mitts on when I was out there. When I wasn't using my hands, I had to put mitts, sheepskin mitts, because I needed to keep my fingers warm. I was very cold out there. So, I mean, my fingers. Oh, it was mainly my fingers, but also I had to put my down jacket on when I was standing around as well, because this one jacket wasn't enough, one fleece jacket. But anyway, I was working outside today, and I installed the second and third canvas tarps on my deck. Instead of the wall and door idea, I put a canvas wall and a canvas door. It was, in some ways, much easier than I might have thought. It's certainly much easier than building a wooden wall and installing an actual wooden door. Much easier than that, but or a metal door for that matter, or any kind of door. I mean, a hinge door, a traditional door, a residential door, whatever we want to call it. A canvas door was much easier than that, but it was, in other ways, it was much more work than I might have imagined too. But I the biggest thing is I cut my thumb. I gashed my thumb, and it was, I don't think I cut right to the bone or anything. I just sort of, it was a flesh wound, right on the knuckle though, right on the knuckle, and it bled quite quickly, and I had to rush into the house to try to get some pressure on it and get a band-aid on it, and I did. So then I could go, and I did go right back to work. I was able to go right back to work, but, and I had very little pain. But there's, it's just a very superficial cut. But I was afraid I wouldn't be able to bend my thumb, but I really didn't need to bend my thumb. It turned out I could use both hands, and I don't really need to bend the thumb. I can put a lot of pressure on the thumb with the fingers, without bending the thumb. So, I mean, that thumb, I could press it against my fingers. I don't have to bend the thumb, and I could still do a lot of things. The main thing I was trying to do was, well, hold. I was trying to hold a wrench so I could turn, I could tighten the eye hooks, so that I could tie onto them, and then. But I didn't have any eye hooks, so I had to bend them. I had some hooks, screw hooks that didn't form a complete circle, so I had to smash them with a hammer into a closed shape, so that I could use them as eye hooks. But that worked. So, it seems like it will work anyway. And I the main thing I was trying to do was tie this wire around the eye hooks and around any nails that I was using instead of eye hooks. So I was hammering nails, things like that, but all that I could do was, I was able to squeeze my finger and thumb together and grab onto the wire and pull it tight without really bending my thumb. I could make a fist, you can make a fist with your fingers and squeeze against your thumb and pull you could pull a string or a wire, anything you want, quite efficiently without bending your thumb. So I learned something today, but I also, yeah, I learned something about using the right pliers, because the pliers I used did not have any grip on them, any teeth, so that I couldn't grab the wire, and it slipped off the wire, and I hit my thumb, and it just, yeah, it's bad, because that's my right hand too. I always do everything with my left hand if there's any danger to my right hand. So I don't, because I don't want to injure my right hand. But I am really tired, so. But it's physical tiredness. It's not spiritual tiredness, I don't think. It's just physical. And I what time did I go out? It was about, I was starting work at about 1300 hours, I think. So it's a bit, it's been about 4 hours. But the thing is, yeah, the installation of the door actually was the last thing I did, and it went very quickly. Just folding the canvas in half, and it was almost the perfect height to nail it up. It was the perfect height. I mean, any longer, and I would have had to, I would have had to attach it to the ceiling or something. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do it without folding it. But I was able to just hang it straight to the ground, and it just barely touches the ground. Everything's perfect. I mean, it just doesn't quite touch. It doesn't quite touch the ground, and was able to bend the nail and then hook on at the bottom, where the canvas folds. There is one grommet, and that grommet I was able to get a nail through the grommet, where I was able to nail a nail into the bottom of the wall, the bottom of the door frame, and then that grommet I was able to hook. I'm able to hook that grommet onto that nail at the bottom, on one side, of the door, and if it's it hooks on, and it'll probably, because I bent the nail. I bent the nail in such a way that, you know, I bent it at a right angle, but then I put another nail under it and bent it further than a right angle so I could get it in a curve. And on the other side of the door, I don't want to hold the door tight at the same opposite points. So on the opposite side of the door, it's not held at the bottom, but it's held further up. And then that's the door latch. So I can just open that door latch and walk right through, and over on this side, it's still held at the bottom. So it functions like a normal door, but except it's held at the top on both sides. That's the only thing. So it's not a fully hinged door, because it's at the top. It's got two attachments, one on each side, where the grommets are. Well, I mean, in one case, folding it, there were two grommets on the one side, two grommets, and on the other, so I could just put the nail through both grommets. But I accidentally nailed through the canvas on the behind, on the layer in back, on the layer in the back. The first time I nailed through the canvas instead of through the grommet, because it slipped or something, and then I had a real time trying to get that nail out, because I'd hammered it in quite far, and there's no room between the joists to use the nail as a lever. I mean, to use the hammer as a lever. It was very difficult. It was just barely enough room. And I had to go in the basement to get, 2x4s, blocks of 2x4 to use as a fulcrum. Because I couldn't, you can't pull a nail out when it's sticking out 2 inches using a hammer, unless you have a lot of room. But even then, it's just not efficient. You need a fulcrum. You need to fill in the space between the nail and the wood you're pulling it out of first. So you put in a block of 2x4 in against the wood, and then you pry the nail out against that fulcrum. So I went in the basement to get two 2x4s and 1 3/4 inch plywood block, just to make sure I had all the different lengths covered, you know, all the different thicknesses that I might need covered for a fulcrum. So This is the first kind of real day of work I've done in a long time in terms of building something or designing, or, you know, it's the first day since my wife passed, but it probably since a lot longer than that. It's the first day since I've done this kind of work where I actually had to build something and make adjustments on the fly and use real tools. The only thing, I didn't use my drill. Didn't use the drill. I didn't use the lag bolts that I could have used. Decided to stick with nails and the eye hooks, screwing them in. And I just hammered in the eye hook and then turned it until it got tight, right? And then there was some very interesting thing that happened on the wall part of I explained the door, but I think the door's hung perfectly at the perfect height, so that's amazing, and it still goes up right up to the top of the deck on the inside. But I had to hang it from the inside of the deck, because then the joists don't interfere with it. It's the joists on that side are parallel. I'm trying to think, what are the joists like on the other side? Well, there's just nothing to nail it to on the other side. That's what it is. Because the joists end there. So I put a wood frame in there, but the wood frame that I put in has it's not very substantial because it's not load-bearing. There's nothing really to nail into. So, but on the inside, I could nail onto the joists on both sides. And on the folded side, there's just one grommet, so I just have to get the nail on the inside through that grommet that's on right on the fold. and then I don't have to nail through the canvas. But I already put one nail through the canvas, as I explained, on the other side. So that's going to weaken that. In the future, it might tear because of that hole that I put in the canvas. But I can repair it probably anyway. You know, with, I can glue leather onto it. I can reinforce it myself, as long as I'm paying attention to what's happening. So I'm not concerned. It's beautiful canvas. Beautiful canvas. It's probably not going to get too much sun exposure there, or even on the other one, even on the other wall there. It's not going to get a lot of sun exposure. On the wall, oh, it's a great thing to explain. I mean, it's so interesting. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I measured everything, and I found out that the remaining distance that all my these new tarps, they're all 69 inches wide, which is almost the same as the 68 inches I was talking about. They're all 69 inches wide. And the amount of distance I have remaining on the front of the carport where I put the one tarp to overlap the gap in the two tarps, in the two old ones, that tarp is there now, and there's a full 69 inches remaining to the house. Exactly 69 is the distance remaining. So if I buy another one, I can put that the other one right there, where that other one, the old one, is, and take the old one out of there. That's what I can do there. And I can replace the I can take the other old one out from being behind if I want to, but I don't have to. But I can take away the, I mean, I can add another tarp on the other south end of that, so that I have the, I can put a full width of tarp, and then on the other one, there's only half a width, 33 inches remaining to fill in. So, because I overlapped the tarps last time, so I can either overlap the new one, or I can, you know, so I can buy two new ones and overlap one of them, or fold it in half, or, you know, or have it come inside the deck, or whatever. There's different ways of doing it, but I can get some more tarps now. The same as the ones I just ordered. Maybe I can order them if they still have them in stock. I don't know if they have them in stock. I need to find out. That's very important for me to get get busy with these things. Let's look at the orders that I made here. Let's see if I can find this. Where is it? There it is. I looked at tarps all last night until 5 in the morning. I was shopping for all kinds of other kinds of tarps because I realized there are a lot more tarps that I haven't considered, like polyester tarps. But they're not safe health-wise. Polyester might be. But, I mean, the PVC and vinyl are not supposed to be safe for children. I didn't realize. They're not very thick either. So I think I need to stick with canvas because I don't want it blowing in the wind. That's the thing. For the particular use that I'm putting it to. I don't want it to blow around. So let's see what happened with the tarps. Where are they? Here it is. Yeah, here's the tarp. Let me see what I've got there. No, they just have them in stock. So a lot of the other tarps, they said they only had three in stock, or three left, you know, three. In some cases, only, you know, a limited, anyway, three, two, five, a limited number of tarps in stock was kind of one of the problems that I had when I was shopping. I realized that if I want to have tarps on all my deck, on both my decks, I mean, on all the walls, I could put tarps on all of them, and because the 69 inches works perfectly, and the 82 inches is about the same as the length of the tarp. So, I mean, 82 inches, if I turn it sideways, if I rotate it, it's 82 inches wide in that way, and it's 69 inches high in that case. So, because one of my decks, the exposed deck that I'm working under when I'm doing this work today, that deck on the west side of it, which I wasn't near, I was on the opposite side, I was on the east side of that deck. On the west side of that deck, there's three gaps that need that could be filled with a tarp. The middle one's 82 inches wide, so it could be exactly filled by the 88-inch tarp, or you know, and a little bit to spare. And then it's got a height of about 70 inches or something to the ground, I think, on that one, and the tarp 69, so it's pretty close to exact. It probably will work. It's you know roughly. It would have a 3-inch gap at the bottom if it's 72, you know, compared to 69, whatever the actual height is there. And on the both of the other gaps have a 69-inch gap, which is exactly the right width for the tarps that I've just got. So I can get some more of these tarps because they're all usable. All those places are workable. And the deck itself is 14 feet. I mean, the deck itself is 14 feet wide. Now I got to get my hat on again here. So 14 feet wide. But you know the gap itself is less than that. But 14 feet is 100. I measured 166 inches. 168 is 14 feet, but I measured 167 actually, I think, today. Oh, no, 166, yeah. 166 across the front of it, but that included one of the posts. It's about 160, the gap itself, in the 14-foot deck. The gap you drive the car through is 160 inches, which is, you know, about 8 inches less than 14 feet. So that's, you know, within an inch or so. So, but I'm not going to buy 14-foot tarps, but I could use, because these 88-inch tarps are 7 feet each, right? 7 feet is 84 inches, so two of these tarps turn sideways again, so that the length is this way, the longer dimension is this way. Then they'll be able to fill a height of 69 inches, like I said before, because that's their width when they're standing upright. 69 will be the height that they can cover, and that gap itself to the ground is about, what is it? Well, it'll only be able to get down to the top of the concrete pillars, the sono posts that are there, the sono tube foundations. But that's, and those are about 18 inches off the ground, I think, something like that. So it's the distance that I'm trying to fill there, or the space I'm trying, the height that I'm trying to fill, is about, it's at least 12 inches that it's short anyway. So what would it be, 81? It's probably 80 something inches that the height is. And so, yeah. Right, it's probably 80 something inches, but I don't recall. But I remember I could get down. 69 will bring me down to the, as far as the top of the concrete, which is, you know, about 1.5 feet from the ground, something like that. Maybe 2 feet from the ground. I don't know, whatever it is. So there'd be gaps at the bottom. There'd be a gap at the bottom of each of the end walls. Yeah, because on the other side it's 76 and it's a lower height. But it would still be a 7-inch gap, even on the north end of the carport, a 7-inch gap, which, you know, snow can blow under it or whatever, or a little bit of snow can get under there, but it's not going to be a big problem. Like, it's still worth having a wall of tarps, I think, probably is still worth having. But the only problem is they're going to be really whipping in the wind, right? And they'll probably just tear, right? The grommets will tear right off them or something, or they'll... You really want to have them blow free. You don't want to attach them at the bottom. But if they're free at the bottom, they're going to blow, you know, toward your car or whatever. And you have to not have anything attached to the bottom of them that could damage your car when they're blowing at your car, I guess. I mean, there's a lot of... But I'm thinking of... The design that I came up with for the work that I did today was quite interesting because I didn't really design it except on the fly. I designed it while I was doing it. But, I mean, I had to just work with what I had. And it was very interesting on the wall there on the east side of the exposed deck where I'm trying to cover in my covered deck. The covered deck is the one that I'm trying to enclose as a garage. The other deck is uncovered, and it's got a car under it, but that car is wrapped up. So I don't need to completely tarp in the whole deck, but I could. I'm just considering it. But it would cost $500 to buy. I worked out today. They don't cost much, do they? They're very inexpensive, too. Those tarps are a really good bargain, but they might have to be treated for, you know, waterproofing, and to help them last longer, they might need some treatment against ultraviolet and stuff like that. They're just cotton canvas. It gets eventually destroyed by the sun, I think. It weakens over time. Maybe because of the wetness in the wintertime, whatever it is, something weakens it. And I need to keep it waterproof if I can, and I don't know how to do that yet. I don't really want to make a lot of chemicals, you know, and use a lot of chemicals. That's not healthy. I don't want to be involved with, I'd rather just buy some tarps, use them. When they're worn out, use them to put over my firewood or something, you know. Use them, find another use for them. But, you know, the ones I have now are so dirty looking that the new ones are going to be fantastic with the darker brown. But, of course, they'll probably discolor, too. These new ones, were they brown? No, they're dark green. Yeah, they're dark green, but they're so dark. But they're probably not going to be dark for long because the sun's going to lighten them up again. I just realized that. It's going to bleach them white again, just like the other ones. They were dark brown originally. The original tarps were dark brown, and now they're very light colored. But they get dirt on them. And they've got all these dirty streaks on them. They don't look very good. So I can paint them. You can paint canvas. That's probably what I should do. Paint the canvas somehow. But that's a huge... Anything to do with chemicals is a huge job. It's like taking supplements. It's a huge job to take supplements. It's a healthy chemical, but it's a chemical that you're putting in your body, and you don't ever do that unless you've done a lot of research. You need to know that it works, right? You need to know. So, I'm totally convinced that vitamin K2 works because I've done enough research to convince myself that I didn't try to convince myself. I just became convinced, whether I wanted to be or not. I'm convinced because of what I learned. That it's entirely safe and entirely beneficial. Like, vitamin K2 is the most incredible thing. It's not just a question of safety. If you don't take vitamin K2, you're dead. I mean, you'll die of natural causes, but you're dead. Whereas if you do take vitamin K2, you might live, I mean, decades longer. It's got enormous power. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to get people too excited, But the thing I did today was, I'm getting more excited the more I talk about it. I love talking about stuff that goes well, and it wasn't easy. Like, in the sense that I couldn't just string up tarps, and I couldn't just hang the tarp right across and put some nails in or put some eye hooks and hang it. I couldn't do that. I had to hang it. I mean, there were joists in the way, like joists going this way. So if I try to put the tarp up, it impacts against the bottoms of these joists. So I'm not going to cut the tarp and then slide it. I'm not going to make a slot in the tarp and slide it up around the joist. That would weaken the tarp. But that's, you could do that if you knew how to sew. Maybe you could sew reinforcements and everything. I could have done it that way, but that's a lot more work. What I did was I adapted, and I came up with this idea that, okay, I'll fasten. I suddenly realized that a lot of my deck was being destroyed because water, this is not what I tried to solve either, but the water comes down from above and it destroys the joist hangers. It rusts them. So, but that's not, I didn't try to solve that actually. What I tried to solve was, if I put the tarps on the outside, that water is still going to trickle down into the joist hangers, but it would have been behind the tarp. So I wouldn't have been able to see the joist hangers. That would have been the problem. So that would have been a real hazard because I wouldn't know whether the joist hangers were still intact or whether they were rusted away. So I needed to figure out something else. So I realized it's better to put the canvas on the inside of the carport and attach it there so the water, and then have it angled toward the outside. You know, it can be attached lower down, further toward the outside at the lower down points. So it's going to make the water run out of the carport. So any water that runs down from above, because the deck has slots in it, but it would seep through the gaps anyway. Water trickling down will encounter the tarp on the inside of the carport, and it will be guided away from the carport toward the ground by having the attachment points that are lower down, further out near the extremity of the, well, right at the corner of the house on one side, and right at the post on the other side. So it's attached to the actual vertical post that I talked about before, the 6x6-inch post that's supporting the middle of the deck. That's the attachment point for the bottom of one side of the tarp. And then in the middle, there's a beautiful thing that happened. When I pulled the corner up on the inside, I pulled one of the corners of the tarp up on the inside of the tarp to attach it up on the inside of the end. It's not the joist of the deck, but it's, yes it is, it's the end joist actually, it's one of the joists, the last joist of the deck. I attached it to that, hung it from there from an eye hook that I screwed up to the top into the 2x4 floor of the deck is where I screwed the eye hook, because the tarp was too long, otherwise it would have touched the ground, so I had to screw right up. But it's still the perfect length. Even by doing that, I didn't have to fold it, nothing. So it's perfect right through the grommet. I could attach it with the wire, hang it to the ground, and it's perfect. But then it crosses from there. The tarp comes across, and as it crosses, it comes out to the outside of the carport. As it crosses under, and it crosses under, to cross under, it has to dip down 9 inches. But it crosses under, and at the point where it crosses under, there's a grommet. That grommet I was able to fasten by putting a nail, nailing a nail up into the edge of the two end joists, the end plates of that deck. That nail, I tied the wire to it very tight so it can't slip off. I bent that nail too, and then I tied that wire to the grommet that's in the middle of that edge of the top edge, the middle of the top edge of this piece of canvas. So the canvas is attached there at the house, and then at the middle through that one grommet, and then at the end corner, I managed to find it. I could pull it up on the inside of my stairs. That's where it is. It's on the inside of the stairwell, on the right. So it's right by your feet when you walk down. That's where the eye hook is. That it's attached, and you can see the corner of the tarp there. And it's by doing that, it keeps the tarp more or less tight everywhere. You know, it's threaded down. It comes from the inside. Then it comes over. Trying to think. Well, it has to go down. It comes down to the post, which is further toward the outside, away from the stairs. The post is standing up pretty well, almost, well, it's not quite up against the stairs. So to reach to that part of the tarp, it has to come out away from the stairs and then attach to the post. That's keeping the water away from the stairs, basically, right? So it's actually a good thing. But then the tarp has to go out from the stairs to the underneath the bottom of the joists, and then cross over, like I said, and go back to the corner of the house on the inside where it attaches. And it's attached at the middle point too, to the underside of the end joist. So that's, it's kind of like draped and stretched in a makeshift kind of path that works, and it looks okay. It doesn't look bad. You know, it looks like it's functional. So it looks good. Anything that's functional looks good. You know, so it looks pretty good. It's satisfying to look at it, because you say, well, that works. You know, it's going to work. But the problem I noticed when I was out there was that there are these big galvanized plates that were used to reinforce and anchor the deck to the stairs. So the stairs won't separate, and they've gotten very rusty. They're almost completely rusted out. And so that means, so I did put some 5-inch nails in there through the through the end plate of, where did I put the 5-inch nails through? I'm going to look at it again. I know I am, but I did put 5-inch nails in there to try and reinforce that. I'm just trying to think, did I put them in the right place? There's no way to find out in the dark, so I'm not going out there now to find out. But I think I did it right back then when I did it, but I can't remember what I did now. And I looked at it today and I thought I saw what was done, but wherever those plates are, it was just to try and connect the deck, you know, to connect the deck to the stairs. That was what it was. I mean, the stairs aren't going to separate. I mean, they're leaning against the deck. It's not like they're trying to pull away. It's just to keep them from slipping down, you know. That's what these plates were for, to keep them from slipping down. These steel, galvanized steel plates. So, I mean, but I also, I thought of today, I can weld up some plates now. I've got steel. I've got a welder. I can weld up any kind of plate I want. I can screw it on. So I can reinforce it myself anytime now with my welder and with my steel that I have available to me. I can use heavier gauge, because I've got heavier gauge, so I can use anything. I mean, I can do anything. It's just steel is a little hard to drill in, but I do have a plasma cutter. I can learn to cut the nails with a to cut the holes with a plasma cutter. That's what I want to do. And I want to build my chin-up bar. I realized today that my chin-up bar idea doesn't work because the angle iron have to be opposite to each other. So the angle iron, they come along the wall and then they come out. So along the wall, the angle iron come along the wall and then they come, no good, along the wall and then out from the wall, right? That's what the angle iron are going to do. The angle is like that. So because the angle is on the outside in both cases, I can't just hook them on by sliding them like this at a diagonal. Well, I can. Yeah, sure I can. Yeah, but I have to remove more material from the angle iron, from the angle iron side where the outside is going to be passed through as you're hooking it on. So, because the head of the screw has to pass through that whole side, you know, it has to pass through the side that sticks out. So there's more to cut away there than I had been thinking. I hadn't thought of that. Didn't even think of it. That's the thing about design. It's, you get ideas, right? And they're not fully formed. They might be great ideas, but they're not fully formed. And you don't realize what some of the implications are at the beginning of the design phase. And that's one of the things that's troublesome about design, but it's also one of the things that's so great about it. Because you get to learn as you go. Like, so while I was installing this tarp today, for example, I learned tons of things on the go. Like, and I can't recount them all, you know, because there were so many things I learned. There must have been. But, you know, I had to adapt to everything that was happening. And I was stuck. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I just knew I had to get it done. Because we're going to get snow maybe tomorrow, so, you know, whenever we're going to get snow, I wanted to be ready and try to stop some of the snow from coming in to the deck, underside of the deck. I mean, to the carport area where the van is being kept for the winter, my winter vehicle. So I've got a lot of things. I mean, it's just fantastic that I'm out working again. I'm working today. I'm working. I'm at work, and I haven't been at work. I have not done a day's work like that for more than 6 years, easily. Easily more than 6 years. It's just, I've just been in post-traumatic shock, I guess. You know, I've been... Yeah, I'm not, it hasn't changed any of my beliefs about addiction and all these things. None of those things have changed. I still believe identically what I believed before. I just feel better about myself because I've got some work under my belt now. You know, I got some work done today. It's still exciting now, but it was exciting. It wasn't so much exciting doing it because I knew I was working against the clock. I had to get it done before dark, and I didn't have much time. It gets dark so early. So I had no time, you know, and I still managed to get it done before dark. So, I mean, I'm very pleased. The door was hung last, and it was just a matter of folding the canvas and finding what height it needed to be and what position. When the door is folded double, it fits exactly in the door opening. Exactly. So that's another thing. I didn't plan that. The 69-inch width of the tarp is exactly the 68 inches I needed, right, for the other case. But it's even more because I had extra because I didn't have to overlap it with the corner of the house. I didn't have to overlap with the corner of the house, like I was going to. Instead, I'm over on this side. I'm back further inside that corner of that house on the inside of the carport is where it is. So it's hooked up on the inside. So that gives me more length on this side to pull it up inside the stairs. And, well, it was just, it's only inside the stairs by about, 8 inches. That's all you see is a corner, about 8 by 8 corner of the tarp is all you see on the stairs. It's attached to the inside of the riser, it's the stringer. The stringer that you use to string the stairs. Inside of the stringer is where it's attached. And my stringers are doubled, all on both sides. Or is it both sides? Yeah, I don't know. I guess they were doubled on both sides. But I built a wall around it afterward. I built a wall on the inside, on the inside of the stairs, on the inside, the carport side of the stairs. That there is a physical wall there, but I built it to slide if there's frost heaving. So it's connected at the top with a sliding connection. And that wall, I talked about that to Raleigh when Raleigh was the building inspector in Metcalf. So he approved that design. That was my idea, but I built this carport wall. That's the only wall that the carport has, I think. Well, that's not true. I filled in between the sono posts on the south side of this is my covered carport. It faces east-west. It runs east-west in the 20-foot length, where the other 20-foot by 14 deck runs north-south in the 20-foot length, the exposed deck. But this is the covered deck, which is on the east side, right at the end of the house. It's right, you walk out onto it from the house. That deck, the south wall of that deck, I filled in between the sonotubes with walls. So each wall is about maybe 6 feet or something in width. And those walls only go down to the sonotubes too. So you don't have to fill all the way down to the ground. But those walls only went down to the sonotubes. No, they didn't. No, I built them. How did I do that? Oh yeah, I filled in the gap of the above. I have one part of them. The end of them rests on the sonotube. I filled the gap between the sonotube and the wall with another piece of wood, so like a 2x4 or something, or maybe they only needed a 3/4-inch piece. But whatever it is, there's a piece filling in the gap between the. It's not the sonotube. It's the post that sits on the sonotube. There was a bit of a gap. There would have been a gap there. I had to put the wall in between the I had to fill the. I had to. The wall goes down the sono post. The wall goes down the sono post, almost to the ground, like a few inches from the ground, maybe 4 or 5 inches from the ground. I don't know, enough to allow for frost heaving, and then the gap between that wall and the post that sits on the sono tube has to be filled. You have to fill the gap, so that's filled with some other piece of wood. That's the right thickness. So that's how I built the I built those walls many years ago. Probably in, I think we built our second deck in 87. I was looking at, when I talked about that the other day, I think I remembered that. They looked like we built it in 87. That would mean I did these other walls were built in 86 or something. I filled in that south side of that covered deck with those walls, mini walls, like 6 feet wide walls. They completely box in the carport and keep the weather out, except from above it can rain down through the cracks that are intended to be in the deck. So they're like quarter inch or eighth inch gaps in the boards of the deck, 2x4 boards of the deck, that it can leak water down into the carport. But it keeps a lot of weather out to have a wall on the south side, and then I built a wall on part of the north side, and now I'm filling the rest of the north side with this hanging tarp. But see, it's attached to that bolt that I put in the wall the other day, that lag bolt that I screwed into the southwest corner of the house. That's one of the attachment points for the tarp. Then it's attached at the top, but the other side has not got the attachment point at that same height. It's got attachment point at the top and further down, but not as low as that, so that this tarp can then blow at one corner. It's got the ability to let the wind through, because it's not attached at the top and then at two equal points down here, which would cause it to billow and suddenly, you know, flap, like suddenly, you know, make a loud noise when the wind hits it, because it would suddenly fill with the wind, right? But I've left one of the corners loose. So it's going to be able to, the wind's going to be able to blow through that lower corner. The wind will blow right through it, right through that corner, like, you know, wind blowing through. And so in the other corner, it's fastened and up high. That's the side near the house. So it's going to have, but it can still blow through, you know, in the bottom 2 feet of that side. It's still possible for that. So the bottom of the on the house side of the tarp, the bottom of the tarp can actually blow. Bottom 2 feet or so is loose. I'm not trying to attach it rigidly everywhere. I need to allow the wind to get through it, right? So that way, when the wind blows really hard, there's some place for that force to be dissipated. And even though it means some of the snow will come through that tarp, if it's a blizzard, but a blizzard doesn't usually have any wind. That's the thing. There's no real danger of snow coming in anyway. I don't really care, you know, if we occasionally get snow coming in. It's just, I want to keep the majority of the snow out. That's all. It normally snows when there's no wind. So this is going to do the job, I think. It's going to be, and there's not much sun exposure there, so that tarpaulin will probably last. I've got a plastic piece. I had to tear it out today, and I didn't tear it all the way out because I'm still using it on the part of the deck until I get one more tarp maybe to fill in that gap, I'm possibly going to order a whole bunch of new tarps just like the ones I have because they're so good. Maybe I'll do that, but I'll have to think about it because it's going to be, like, if I order 10 more, it's, you know, $500, more than $500 to get 10 more of those tarps. I don't need that. I just don't need it, right? But it's something, I mean, I could box in the other deck, keep the snow out of it, but it's going to get rained on because it's an exposed deck. It gets meltwater and it just gets torrential rain stuff. Anything that comes through the exposed deck, through the gaps in those boards, which are there for a reason, to allow the deck to dry out so it doesn't trap moisture. But that exposed deck is always going to get the car underneath it exposed to a lot of rain. So So I need to just wrap up that car when I'm not using that car. That's what I do. So the car that's kept there is always wrapped up right now. I don't try to... I'm going to turn on my heat now. It's time to get some more heat again. I don't try to run two cars at the same time. So I'm only running one car right now. So the other car is always wrapped up. So I don't need to put tarps all the way around that exposed deck because, it would just mean that that car was better protected, but it wouldn't really serve all that much of a purpose. It would also create a problem of those things being blown by the wind and maybe putting stresses on that exposed deck that would cause that deck to collapse because, or it would have to be reinforced against the forces of these tarps. So it's a very significant problem but even if the wind doesn't blow very often, it only takes one strong gust of wind and you could blow your deck over or something. So yeah, it's a serious thing, right? So that's why I took so long to design and come up with the idea for putting these tarps in place in the first place. And these are not tarps on the whole structure, just on that one side of the covered deck, which didn't have any coverage. But I've left the plastic in place on the south part of that wall that wasn't covered. That one little bit that wasn't covered between the stairs and the... It's got plastic there between the stairs and the post, I guess is where it is. Yeah, the post comes up and there's a little triangle that would have been exposed where the deck, so that the snow might have blown up on the stairs, but it probably doesn't ever come from that direction. The wind always blows that way, though, from the north, from the northwest. So the wind could bring the snow underneath the deck and right onto the stairs. And that's why I put that plastic coming that far to the south stapled it to the post. Anyway, it's still got the plastic there, but I had to tear that plastic down because even though it's been there for years, it still is in one piece. It got torn, but it didn't get completely, destroyed by the elements. So there's not a lot of sun, I think, underneath there. So the tarp might last for... I mean, that piece of plastic lasted for several years, I think, if I'm recalling. When did I put that there? Was Anne still with us when I put that there? I can't remember now. I don't think so. So it might have been there for, 5 years or something, but I don't know. But the tarps that I've got there now, they might last, 20 years. It's possible. If I did it right, so that the wind is allowed to get through and everything. And it's not, the thing is, it's very critical. Anyway, it's critical. It was fun. Hopefully it works, and we'll see what happens when we get some snow. I can't wait to see, what happens when we get some snow now. There's another fun project I've got because of this. I've got a fun little project now working on how to get a latch for a canvas door. How can I make a latch for that so I can open and close that door and latch it and have it work reliably with the latch and not have the latch fly open during a windstorm and things like that and still have the wind be able to get through the door? And also, how do I hook on the bottom corner of the door, when I want it hooked on and not have to bend down, stoop down to the ground to hook it on? Because I like to have that unhooked probably when I'm going through the door. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I can just fold up one corner of the door and go through the door that way. I haven't figured that out, but the latch part of the door I would like to get figured out. I think I'll probably use a rope latch and have a rope tied to the wire that's through the grommet, and the rope will be much easier to... I can loop the rope over a much more sizable piece of wood, and that'll probably be my latch, something like that. Because it'll be in the dark, basically, behind where the sun is not going to attack the rope. Nylon and polypropylene do not do well in the sun. Polyester does well in the sun, I understand, compared to those. So I want to use a rope that's, it won't be so critical if the rope is sort of out of sight from the sun. But there's lots of things to learn about everything. Engineering to do with ropes and canvas is one. It's probably in my DNA because my ancestors were sailors and fishermen. So it's got to be in my DNA. So that's why I like working with ropes and carabiners and canvas. I just like it. I guess that's why. But I like working with wood too. I actually love it. It's just, I'm well aware of the dangers of modifying a structure that's, you know, already been around for so many years. And, you know, it's survived, but it's susceptible to forces by the wind and so on. Well, I'm just aware of possible dangers. I don't want to have to get a building permit for an exterior construction job either. So I'm being very careful with these canvases for now. We'll see what happens. I'm not going to try to make them more rigid, and I'm not going to stretch a tight canvas between all the corners, because then the wind would blow it and it would just put enormous force on the canvas and on the structure at the same time, and it would just rip the canvas right off, you know, or rip the corners right off it. It's not going to do anything. It's not going to be useful. So let's continue. Now let's do our study. What time is it? How long have I talked? Well, I talked a long time. To the director upon the Gittith of Asaph. I think we've got a fairly short study to do today, little children, so let's do it. Oh, cry out joyfully, you people, to God our strength. Shout in triumph to the God of Jacob. Strike up a melody and take a tambourine. The pleasant harp together with the stringed instrument. On the new moon, blow the horn. On the full moon, for the day of our festival. For it is a regulation for Israel, a judicial decision of the God of Jacob. As a reminder, he laid it upon Joseph himself when he was going forth over the land of Egypt, a language that I did not know, I kept hearing. I turned aside his shoulder even from the burden. His own hands got to be free, even from the basket. In distress you called, and I proceeded to rescue you. I began to answer you in the concealed place of thunder. I went examining you at the waters of Meribah, Selah. Hear, O my people, and I will bear witness against you. O Israel, if you will listen to me, among you there will prove to be no strange god, and you will not bow down to a foreign god. I, Jehovah, am your God, the one bringing you up out of the land of Egypt. Open your mouth wide, and I shall fill it. But my people has not listened to my voice. And Israel itself has not showed any willingness toward me. And so I let them go in the stubbornness of their heart. They went walking in their own counsels. Oh, that my people were listening to me. Oh, that Israel itself would walk in my very ways. Their enemies I would easily subdue, and against their adversaries I would turn my hand. As for those intensely hating Jehovah, they will come cringing to him, and their time will prove to be to time indefinite, and he will keep feeding him off the fat of the wheat. And out of the rock I shall satisfy you with honey itself. That was Psalm 81. And the part I noticed that was interesting was those intensely hating Jehovah, those who intensely hate Jehovah, will come cringing to him, and their time will prove to be to time indefinite, which means if you look at the study Bible, their outcome will be forever. In other words, it doesn't mean that they will live forever. It means that the judgment against them will prove to be to time indefinite. That makes more sense. Their outcome will be forever. They will be cringing to Jehovah, and it's like they will be cringing forever. Cringing forever toward Jehovah, because they will not receive anything from Jehovah, and they will be subdued by Jehovah's people. But on the other hand, verse 16, he will keep feeding his own people off the fat of the wheat, and out of the rock he shall satisfy us with honey itself. Beautiful psalm. Let's go to Isaiah. We're at Isaiah 61. This is a magnificent chapter of Isaiah. Listen to this. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah is upon me, for the reason that Jehovah has anointed me to tell good news to the meek ones. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to those taken captive, and the wide opening of the eyes, even to the prisoners, to proclaim the year of goodwill on the part of Jehovah, and the day of vengeance on the part of our God, to comfort all the mourning ones, to assign to those mourning over Zion, to give them a headdress instead of ashes, the oil of exultation instead of mourning, the mantle of praise instead of the downhearted spirit. And they must be called big trees of righteousness, the planting of Jehovah, for him to be beautified. And they must rebuild the long-standing devastated places. They will raise up even the desolated places of former times. And they will certainly make anew the devastated cities, the places desolate for generation after generation. And strangers will actually stand and shepherd the flocks of you people. And the foreigners will be your farmers and your vine dressers. And as for you, the priests of Jehovah, you will be called. The ministers of our God, you will be said to be. The resources of the nations you people will eat, and in their glory you will speak elatedly about yourselves. Instead of your shame, there will be a double portion, and instead of humiliation, they will cry out joyfully over their share. Therefore, in their land, they will take possession of even a double portion. Rejoicing to time indefinite is what will come to be theirs. For I, Jehovah, am loving justice, hating robbery along with unrighteousness, and I will give their wages in trueness, and an indefinitely lasting covenant I shall conclude with them, and their offspring will actually be known even among the nations, and their descendants in among the peoples. All those seeing them will recognize them, that they are the offspring whom Jehovah has blessed. Without fail, I shall exult in Jehovah. My soul will be joyful in my God, for he has clothed me with the garments of salvation. With the sleeveless coat of righteousness, he has enwrapped me, like the bridegroom who in a priestly way puts on a headdress, and like the bride who decks herself with her ornamental things. For the earth itself brings forth its sprout, and as the garden itself makes the things that are sown in it sprout. In like manner, the Sovereign Lord Jehovah will cause the sprouting of righteousness and of praise in front of all the nations. For as the earth itself brings forth its sprout, and as the garden itself makes the things that are sown in it sprout, sown in it grow, because I didn't want to repeat the word sprout, I guess. I don't know why. In like manner, grow would have been fine, I think. In like manner, the Sovereign Lord Jehovah will cause the sprouting of righteousness and of praise in front of all the nations. So this idea of my servant sprout is contained here as well. The idea of the Messiah. The Messiah would be a sprout. that was part of the messianic prophecy, was the sprout, my servant sprout, Jehovah's servant sprout. That's why Jesus was moved with his family. When they returned to Israel from Egypt, they were moved to live in Nazareth, which means sprout town. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah is upon me for the reason that Jehovah has anointed me to tell good news to the meek ones. And also, an indefinitely lasting covenant I shall conclude toward them. That was hard to say when I tried to read verse 8. Also, well, I feel like I'm not reading as well as I could be reading. I feel like I could improve greatly in my ability to read and to speak. I feel like that is something I could improve in. Even though I might read well in places, I don't think it's consistent. And it's so much nicer when you hear someone reading and they don't stumble or they don't have any problem when they're reading. That's the thing. That's a concern that I have with my own reading. Now, when Jesus had finished giving instructions to his 12 disciples, he set out from there to teach and preach in their cities. But John, having heard in jail about the works of the Christ, sent by means of his own disciples and said to him, "Are you the coming one, or are we to expect a different one?" In reply, Jesus said to them, "Go your way and report to John what you are hearing and seeing. The blind are seeing again, and the lame are walking about. The lepers are being cleansed, and the deaf are hearing, and the dead are being raised up, and the poor are having the good news declared to them. And happy is he that finds no cause for stumbling in me." While these were on their way, Jesus started to say to the crowds respecting John, "What did you go out into the wilderness to behold? A reed being tossed by a wind? What then did you go out to see? A man dressed in soft garments? Why, those wearing soft garments are in the houses of kings. Really then, why did you go out? To see a prophet? Yes, I tell you, and far more than a prophet. This is he concerning whom it is written, 'Look, I myself am sending forth my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way ahead of you.' Truly I say to you, people, among those born of women, there has not been raised up a greater than John the Baptist, but a person that is a lesser one in the kingdom of the heavens is greater than he is. But from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of the heavens is the goal toward which men press, and those pressing forward are seizing it. For all the prophets in the law prophesied until John, and if you want to accept it, he himself is Elijah, who is destined to come. Let him that has ears listen. With whom shall I compare this generation? It is like young children sitting in the marketplaces who cry out to their playmates, saying, 'We played the flute for you, but you did not dance. We wailed, but you did not beat yourselves in grief.' Correspondingly, John came neither eating nor drinking, yet people say, 'He has a demon.' And the Son of Man did come eating and drinking. Still people say, 'Look, a man gluttonous and given to drinking wine, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' All the same, wisdom is proved righteous by its works." Then he started to reproach the cities in which most of his powerful works had taken place, because they did not repent. "Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! Because if the powerful works had taken place in Tyre and Sidon that took place in you, they would long ago have repented in sackcloth and ashes. Consequently, I say to you, it will be more endurable for Tyre and Sidon on judgment day than for you. And you, Capernaum, will you perhaps be exalted to heaven? Down to Hades you will come, because if the powerful works that took place in you had taken place in Sodom, it would have remained until this very day. Consequently, I say to you people, it will be more endurable for the land of Sodom on judgment day than for you. At that time, Jesus said in response, I publicly praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and intellectual ones and have revealed them to babes. Yes, O Father, because to do thus came to be the way approved by you. All things have been delivered to me by my Father, and no one fully knows the Son but the Father. Neither does anyone fully know the Father but the Son, and anyone to whom the Son is willing to reveal him. Come to me, all you who are toiling and loaded down, and I will refresh you. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am mild-tempered and lowly in heart, and you will find refreshment for your souls, for my yoke is kindly, and my load is light. That was Jesus talking in Matthew chapter 11. For a good part of that chapter, it was a what do we call that? In the theater, what's it called? Might be called a soliloquy, maybe, or I'm trying to think of if there's another word for it. But it was a one man speaking, you know, a one person speech. It was a person's giving a speech. Jesus was giving a speech there for most of this. And most of this chapter, it was very beautiful, I thought, to hear the words of our Lord, you know, listening to the way he thought, you know, to actually get an inkling of how he thought, to get some insight into how his mind worked by listening to him talk. Just, you know, at his own leisure, or, you know, at his own pace, speaking about the things that he wanted to say at that time, that he thought were important. But then it's interesting, because this chapter is one of the most significant chapters in Scripture for one reason. It refers to the fact that the heavenly calling began with Jesus, because Jesus addresses that very point. He says, from the days of John the Baptist until now, there's a different time, okay, but before that, right, no, that's where it starts, verse 12. From the days of John the Baptist until Jesus, the kingdom of the heavens is the goal toward which men press. It was the goal. Only after John the Baptist came. Because those who were baptized by John became followers of Jesus, because John pointed his disciples to Jesus as the Messiah and told them that he was the one chosen by God, so that people would listen to the message Jesus gave when Jesus was preaching the kingdom of the heavens has drawn near. Jesus was preaching about the heavenly calling, the calling that would invite people to join Jesus in being part of the heavenly government that would restore peace and everlasting life to the earth through the ransom sacrifice that they would administer together. But this was the heavenly calling. This was a new thing. This wasn't existing prior to John. It didn't exist. There was the earthly calling prior to John. And there still are people who have the earthly calling and are getting the earthly calling even today. There are people who get the earthly calling today. But there are people of the heavenly calling who only began to be given that opportunity at the time when Jesus began to preach, which is right 6 months after John began to preach. And John pointed them to Jesus, and Jesus was the one offering the heavenly calling. That was where the beginning of the heavenly calling took place right there with the arrival of Jesus, and actually in the days of John the Baptist. Oh, my thumb. Oh. Yeah, it hurts. If I don't know if it's, I don't know whether there's any pain in the bone. It was only like the pair of pliers that struck my finger, so it's not like it's, I'm gonna have to feel, I have to press on it and see. There's no bone damage, I don't think, anything like that, you know. I'm gonna have to see what it looks like, what it does, how it does overnight, I think. But you know, is it swollen? No, it's not really swollen at all, very much. It's not significantly swollen, or, you know, I mean, let's put it on a dark background so we can see. It's this one that's injured. There is that. This one's the injured one. It doesn't look swollen much at all compared to the other one. There's no real difference, so no. There's no real serious injury. It's just a cut. But sometimes it hurts. Sometimes it hurts because it's in the knuckle. I think that's why. So every time I bend my knuckle, I'm going to open that wound again. I just can't bend the knuckle at all. But there is the origin of the heavenly calling, and there's the explanation as to why there's a heavenly calling and why there's an earthly calling. Well, from Adam and Eve, there was an earthly calling from the days of Adam and Eve, when their goal was to live forever on earth. They didn't have a heavenly calling. There was no need for a heavenly calling or a heavenly government at that time, because they had the opportunity to just listen to God and obey God and live forever on earth. But they disobeyed, and from then on, the Messiah became necessary as a future thing that was coming at that time in the future. But now it's, of course, in the past. The Messiah's come already. Jesus is the Messiah, and he's alive in heaven, like the high priest Melchizedek, who stands forever. He's superior to Melchizedek because he stands forever. He lives forever. He serves as a priest forever. Melchizedek was the priest of Salem or Jerusalem at the time of Abraham. And back in the days of Abraham, there was no law of Moses, because Israel had not been taken into Egypt yet, until Abraham's grandson Jacob was brought with his family into Egypt. So in the days of Abraham, there were no priests, because the law of Moses hadn't been given yet. That wasn't given until the children of Israel left Egypt 430 years after having been brought into Egypt, when Jacob came into Egypt in 1914 BCE, which was, that was the second year of the famine. Joseph took power in Egypt in 1923, and 9 years later was when, in the second year of famine, Jacob and his family came into Egypt in 1914 BCE. And 430 years later, 430 years later, after 1923, that is, when Joseph was brought to Egypt, when he first took power, that is, in Egypt. When he first took power in Egypt, Joseph was brought to Egypt at the age of 18, and he spent, that was in 1936 BCE, and he spent 12 or 13 years in for most of that time, or at least part of that time, I should say, not most of it. But he wasn't a citizen of Egypt for almost all of that time, right up until 1923, when he was put in power in Egypt. He became a citizen at that point. Obviously, he couldn't rule Egypt if he wasn't even a citizen of Egypt. But he'd been a foreigner living in Egypt, so his residence in Egypt didn't begin until 1923, when he began to rule Egypt. in 1936 through 1923, he'd been working for different people in Egypt, and he spent time in prison. And a prisoner is not a citizen of Egypt either. So he just wasn't a citizen of Egypt until Pharaoh appointed him. Then he became a real citizen of Egypt. That was 1923 BCE. And that's an amazing date, because the mirror date of that is the copyright law date in 1923 of our common era. That's an important date for copyright, 1923. And, well, I've talked about it in my articles too, the other things associated with these dates in the common era of the mirror date to the BCE dates. For example, 1493, which is the Exodus date, the mirror date to that is the first voyages of, the second voyages of Columbus. After 1492, the discovery of America by Columbus, in 1493, there were return journeys to establish colonies. That was 1493. So that's the mirror date to 1493 BCE, the Exodus date. There are a lot of interesting mirror dates in the genealogy, which is the chronology of the Bible, the biblical chronology, right? The biblical chronology, that what is the, is it biblical archaeology? Bible chronology is the holy grail of, yeah. Okay, look that up. The Holy Grail of biblical archaeology. That's the true chronology. Finding the true chronology of the world. I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's what I've been talking about in my articles, finding the true chronology of the world, which has never been known, because there have been too many different things that have caused confusion throughout history that have prevented the discovery of the true chronology. But the true chronology is the holy grail of biblical archaeology, because the Bible is a firm basis for chronology. It's a very firm basis for history. It's a firm basis for anything, for that matter, for how to live. But it provides the anchor points that we need to get the chronology determined accurately, and to therefore it's the source of this holy grail of the true chronology, which is the holy grail of biblical archaeology, because archaeologists don't find true chronology necessarily, not without the Bible. We need the Bible. But the other thing is, there was another thing I thought of there. The Bible provides provides us with, oh yes, the okay, that's right. The other thing we use is the Egyptian chronology. The Egyptian chronology is such an important chronology. In all of chronology, other than the Bible, which is the best source of chronology, Egyptian is the second best chronology. And that is, we have the day exact chronology from 691 or 690 BCE on down. It's day exact. It's exact to the very day. So we know all the kings. We know that Necho couldn't have ruled, you know, more than a year or two, or you know, whatever, a very short period of time prior to 609, when he defeated Josiah and killed him. we know the Egyptian chronology. It's rock solid. Absolutely rock solid. So let's look up Nikko. Let me look up Nikko here. Because he doesn't appear in all my things. He doesn't appear in all my articles. Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah, but I just need to look at chapter 3. Yeah. When we look at the history of Babylon, in the Egyptian chronology, right. Nikko began to rule, Nikko II, in 610. That's what I was thinking. 610. And that's exact. We don't have any doubt about that. So he could not have been killing Josiah 20 years earlier than that, because the Egyptian chronology is day exact from 690 and 691, one or the other of those two, depending on how you decide that first part. It's day exact, though, from that point on. Absolutely exact. There's nothing in doubt about the Egyptian chronology. Taharqa was the king starting around 690, I believe. Is that right? 690 for Taharqa? Is it mentioned there? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, this table that I'm looking at doesn't go back to Taharqa, actually. But, I mean, it doesn't need to, but it's day exact from 690 or 691, which is, I believe, Taharqa. And then 664 is Psammeticus, and 610 is Nikko II. And 595 is Psammeticus II, and Hophra or Apres is 589, and Amasis is 570. And Psammeticus III is 526, and those are day exact. They're exact. Those are exact years or exact dates for the Egyptian kings. It's a day exact chronology. We don't have any doubt about it. And that's why it's an important thing, along with the biblical chronology. You know, that we don't have anything before 691 in Egypt, so it doesn't help us much before that at all. But there's nothing quite as exact as after 691 in Egypt, as far as Egypt goes. But it's very useful as far as that time period. So the 510 for Nikko, it makes... Or sorry, 610 for Nikko makes it definite that 609 is when Josiah was killed. He wasn't killed 20 years earlier. We don't have that freedom to say that, because it's not correct. So let's look up Taharqa. Okay. Taharqa. Look up Taharqa and it'll come up, if it comes up at all, which it's not doing. There it is. It didn't come up very quickly that time. Yeah, he's believed to have ruled, some people say 690 and some will say 691, but his first year is maybe in doubt by 1 year, but everything after him is completely exact. Like it's, and it, that day exact chronology can, it actually starts with his first year. That's where it begins. So it's ironic that we don't know for sure whether it's 691 or 690. Maybe that's a little ironic that that's the beginning of day exact chronology, but that's the truth of the matter. The way I wrote about it in, where was that, Taharqa? Let me look for Taharqa, yeah. Let's look for Taharqa. Let me look for Taharqa. Because he doesn't appear in all my articles. I think it's in preservation. Yeah. Maybe not. No, I guess not. No, it wasn't that one. No, it's one of the earlier ones. It might be. It might be in B4 chronology. It might be that one. I don't know. I think that's it. I think it is in B4 chronology. Right. There it is. Yeah, it's in B4 chronology, chapter 8. The gift of Pianchi Alara. That's the beginning of day exact Egyptian chronology. Paragraph 8.1 of the Before Chronology or History of Babylon article that I wrote. Taharqa, 690 or 691 BCE. That's the beginning of day exact Egyptian chronology. Now, I guess the people who say it's day exact, they don't question whether it's 691 or 690. I'm questioning that. But it's still, that's the beginning of what is called day exact Egyptian chronology. So this has been Ward Green. It's a pleasure to talk to you again, little children. It's a pleasure to share the study with you again. And I hope we keep doing it. It's going to be a little longer today, but it is December 21st, 2022. 1839 hours is the time. And my name is Ward Green. I love you. It's a beautiful day in some ways for me because I got some work done today for the first time in a long time. Seek first the kingdom. Seek first the kingdom and take courage. I've conquered the world. That's John 16:33. Seek first the kingdom and all the other things will be added to you. Have a wonderful day. I love you. Bye for now.